Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When it's time to scale your business, it's time for Shopify. Get everything you need to grow the way you want. Like, all the way. Stack more sales with the best converting checkout on the planet. Track your cha-chings from every channel, right in one spot. And turn real-time reporting into big-time opportunities. Take your business to a whole new level. Switch to Shopify. Start your free trial today.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Epochs, where I shall be doing part four of my story all about Marius and Sulla and the decline and fall of the Roman Republic. So last time I left off with Marius having concluded his war with Mithridates, and in the story, Mithridates is not done with. There are actually three Mithridatic wars. That was only the first of the three. So in the broader story of the decline and fall of the Roman Republic, Mithridates will still be on the scene. So the lion, Cornelius Sulla, is on the way back to Rome to deal with his political enemies. Remember Marius himself, the old Marius had died of natural causes. Quite a while ago now, Sulla was out in the East for something in the order of 5 years. And it's been a good couple of years since Marius has died, 2-3 years since Marius has died. So it's a whole new faction of people. It's still, incidentally, it's still called the Marian faction. And his son, also Gaius Marius, Gaius the Younger, is one of the leaders. And he is young. He's only about 26 in 83 BC, which is the year that Sulla actually returns. But the real leaders are Cinna, another guy called Carbo, and another sometime consul called Scipio, not one of the more famous, revered Scipios. But there's sort of Cinna, Carbo, Scipio, Marius the Younger, and a few others. And the lion is returning from the east. Carbo called him something between a lion and a fox. And it's the half of Sulla that is the fox that you need to worry about. He's both brave and strong and noble and fierce, but also very, very cunning and nimble. And it's the more cunning and nimble thing about him, which is truly terrifying. Now, everyone knows that Sulla is on his way back, and they know this for a year or more. And apparently, this throws Rome into all sorts of psychological turmoil. Dan Carlin talked about as some sort of analogy. Imagine if, in a modern world, we knew an asteroid was coming and was certainly going to impact the Earth, a big one. And we knew it was coming. There's nothing we could do to avoid it. But it wasn't going to happen for like a year or two. What would that really do to society and politics? Probably on all sorts of levels, society and politics might break down or cease to function correctly, at least, at the very least. Well, that's really what happened in Rome. The Popularis faction, i.e. the Marian faction, sort of politically throw caution to the wind and don't even really start trying to play the game properly. Cinna and Carbo and Scipio just sort of openly take consulships for themselves year after year, not even really pretending to play the game correctly. And also most of the Optimate faction, the old establishment landed class senatorial faction, most of them have either been killed or fled already. So anyone that would have been their legit opposition in Rome aren't even there. So politics is sort of completely broken in Rome in this point. Well, I say completely, on the surface, it still carries on. That's a remarkable thing about Rome, the Roman Republic and the Roman Empire, even into the years of the late Roman Empire and the empire in the east in Constantinople for hundreds and hundreds of years, even towards the end of the Byzantine Empire, there was still a Roman Senate, which still would go through the motions of electing consuls and praetors and giving out governorships and military commands. And even though by the age of Augustus and Tiberius, it was largely, certainly by the age of Caligula or some point, someone like that, it was all really a sham, a bit of a show. All power lay with either the triumvir or the emperors. But the Senate would still go through all the motions, sort of pretending it still mattered and people still ran for office and all that sort of thing. Anyway, this starts sort of here where the real authority and power had shifted away from the Senate and lay in the hands of sort of senior faction leaders. But they carried on as though everything was okay, as though everything was still normal. So I say politics was broken and ruined, and in the truest sense it was. But on the surface, everything carried on. It's a remarkable thing about the Roman Senate. As I say, for hundreds of years, they continued to do that. Quite remarkable, the sort of degree of self-deception that can go on. And also, I mean, Cinna didn't act completely like a tyrant or a dictator. He had subverted the rules in all sorts of ways. As I say, awarding himself consulships and giving them the other consulships and senior roles in the state to his friends and things. But also at the same time, sort of allowed the few remaining dissenting voices to sort of speak openly. And there was a faction within Rome, within the assemblies and the Senate, that were neither Marian nor Sullan, sort of very deliberately so, trying to keep their powder dry, so to speak. And he allowed them to function and still speak more or less openly. So he was far from a Caligula or a Nero or a Caracalla, someone that would sort of butcher whole swathes of the Senate if they looked at him sideways. He wasn't like that at all. And as I said last time, a big chunk of the Senate and the senatorial class and equites, the knightly class of Rome, who were pro-Sullan or anti-Marian, they'd all fled. So a bit of an exodus from Rome, really, fled to the east, to the safety of Sulla's camp, if they thought they were actually going to be killed or at least have all their property or money confiscated by the Marians, they would flee to the east. And so many of them had that Sulla was able to say that he's almost got a Senate in exile all of his own. And the Marian camp, the Populares, had done a real number on them. You know, hundreds or a few thousand people had been executed. Lots and lots of property had been expropriated, stolen. And the people that fled to Sulla, much like the aristocratic class of France during the Revolution, the French Revolution, or aristocratic Russians during the Bolshevik Revolution, where all these people have fled to Sulla, they'd been telling tales, perfectly within their rights to do, of course, but they'd been telling Sulla that this person or that person had done something completely illegal and wrong and immoral and stolen from you and murdered your friends and all sorts of things and burnt your houses down. And this is what Cinna has been doing or saying, and this is what Carbo has been doing or saying. This is how Marius the Younger has been conducting himself. And so Sulla's been building up this picture of everyone he wants to sort of get if and when he gets back to Rome. He's going to have his vengeance in this life. But people in Rome, many people in Rome, don't really know, or they've got no idea about to what extent or how extreme Sulla's vengeance will play out. A lot of them are hoping, you know, I personally did nothing really wrong, or, you know, I only barely was pro-Marian and only then just to save my own life and property. I've never really been against Sulla. Hopefully I won't be on the chopping block, so to speak. When the line returns, hopefully I'm not on the dinner menu. And so there is sort of a type of low burn, but very, very real panic in Rome. What is Sulla going to do? How bad is it going to be when he returns? And there's all sorts of deputations and letters sent to Sulla. Appian gives us a fair amount of detail on those, saying, you're going to be cool with me once you get back to Rome, right? You're not going to kill these of my friends, are you? Etc., etc. One of the many correspondences Sulla has with them, he says basically, no, anyone that wronged us, anyone that was sort of fully in the Marian faction is going to get their comeuppance. They're going to be executed when I get back. Let there be no mistake about it. I mean, just to give you an idea of Sulla's character, certainly at this point in his life, because in the earlier episodes, I said about how he could be very nice and affable, certainly at table, when he didn't have his military hat on, or his political hat on, when he was in party mode. He could be very nice and funny and things. But when the red mist descended, when he was sort of, you know, in serious mode, he was someone not to be trifled with. Just to give a flavour, there's one sort of small anecdote in Plutarch. When he's on his way home from the east, at one point he's in and around the region of Athens on the coast of Greece, and he's near to a small town called Halae. And a few years before, when he'd been besieging Athens, he'd sacked Halae, and he thought he'd killed or ordered all the menfolk of this little place called Halae killed. And on his way home, a few years later, some fishermen, random fishermen, while he's sitting on the shoreline at one point, bring him some fish as an offering, some fresh fish, as just a gift, as an offering. And he's pleasant enough and says, thank you. Where are you guys from? And they say they're from Halae. And apparently he just sort of goes deadpan, like he gets those dead eyes about him. And just suddenly it's very, very a serious moment. And apparently he says, what? Is there a man of Halae still in existence? And apparently all the men there are just like, their mouths go dry and they're petrified, glued to the spot and don't know what to say. Their mouths just falling open and they're too frightened to move or say anything. And then suddenly Sulla's expression, because Sulla was the type of person that might just order them executed on the spot. But then apparently suddenly his expression just breaks. And he sort of smiles and says, oh, well, you did bring me nice fish, so it's okay. Off with you. You know, be gone. Get out of my sight. It's fine. A dangerous, unpredictable person, Sulla. Worrisome. You know, people have known that that's what he's like for quite a while. He's not an unknown quantity. You know, he's already marched on Rome once. People know sort of what Sulla is like. He hasn't shown his true colours yet in quite how bloodthirsty and murderous he could be. But nonetheless, people know that he's as serious as cancer. He's not an unknown entity to them. So in Rome, it's like there's a sort of a sword of Damocles hanging over their head. And there's a faction in the Senate who were never explicitly pro-Marian, who say to Cinna, they say, look, try and placate him if you can. You're not going to be able to beat him in the field. Don't raise any troops even. You know, if you have to flee, flee. But, you know, don't plunge us all into a full-blown civil war. And at least in the first instance, Cinna says, sure, I won't raise troops. I wouldn't dream of that. But then he just does. Then he just goes and does, raises loads of Roman levies or local Italian levies. And he raises lots of troops or an army, really, from the so-called Italian allies. He says to them, Cinna is a very, very persuasive speaker, apparently, you know, an orator. And he says, you know, Sulla is an optimate, right? You know, if he comes back to Rome and installs himself as just a dictator or an autocrat in any sort of way, your dream of having citizenship, full Roman citizenship, that's not going to happen. That's one of the things Sulla and his party have always been against. You really have to fight with me, for me. We're the populares. We're the ones that for generations have been championing your cause. When you rose up in the civil wars, we're the ones that were on your side, that backed you up, remember? Everything we've done for you. And now Sulla's going to return and probably do away with all that. You've got to come fight for us, for me. And a lot of them say yes. So Cinna and Carbo are able to raise pretty large armies, well, very large armies, certainly armies that are enough on paper to match Sulla, or at least give him a run for his money. One of the things to say, though, and said it multiple times on Epochs, is that when it comes to armies, land armies, infantry and things, you want quality over quantity. And Sulla's army is veteran and absolutely 100% fiercely loyal to the mighty Sulla. Sulla's veteran armies are going to be way, way, way better at the job of fighting battles when it all boils down to it than anything Cinna and Carbo can raise, or Marius the Younger. Marius the Younger just simply isn't going to be able to command the sort of gravitas that Sulla can. His levies will be no match for the hardened vets of Sulla. And so where before I've said that if Tiberius and Gaius Gracchus were something like the fuse to a bomb, and Marius, the career of Marius, or the Marian military reforms, if they were something like a powder keg, well, Sulla is the explosion. Sulla returning to Rome for the second time now is that explosion. So Cinna, in the first instance, doesn't really want to allow Sulla to actually land in Italy. His calculation is, and probably correctly, that once Sulla lands in Italy, he's going to garner sort of overwhelming support, and just the tactical side of any fighting will be in his favour because he's the superior tactician. Just strategically speaking, it's probably better for us, the Populares, the Marian party, if we can, to take the war out to Sulla and have some battles in Asia Minor, in Greece, in Thrace, the Balkans, if we can. It's going to be better for everyone, really. It's just going to be better for the Republic. If there's going to be battles between legionaries, if we can do it not on Italian soil, that's going to be best. So that's what Cinna thinks. So Cinna takes his army and he starts ferrying it across the Adriatic. And some of it gets across, but then there's a big storm in the middle of this crossing. And the other half of his men, or the other big contingent of his men, which haven't crossed yet, who are stopped from crossing by a storm, they sort of seem to lose their nerve or decide they don't necessarily want to do this anymore. You know, something approaching a mutiny, saying, well, you know, we're not going to cross the sea right now because there's a storm, and being shipwrecked in the ancient world was almost certainly a death sentence. Most people couldn't swim. So we're not crossing right now. That's off the cards because of a storm. And we're rethinking the whole idea of crossing over to Dalmatia, or crossing over to Greece at all, because, you know, they just sort of lose their nerve a bit and sort of starting to look like they're beginning to mutiny. Now, Cinna decides to deal with this by sort of dressing them down, by trying to browbeat them and humiliate them into getting going, getting back on side. And it backfires. It doesn't work. Now, there's a couple of different ways you can try and persuade people, isn't there? You can try and sort of coerce them in a nice, good, positive way. You know, you can try and bribe them. You can try and sort of appeal to their sense of honour, or you can try and flatter them. You can just try and use reason. There's all sorts of, you know, fairly positive, good, nice ways to try and get someone to try and bend somebody to your will. And then there's just the more harsh, negative, even violent or mean ways, right? You can just sort of try and bully them into doing what you want or try to threaten them in various ways. Anyway, Cinna tries that. You know, there's examples in other parts of history where Alexander or Caesar, they both show sort of disappointment a couple of times when their men don't follow them or don't do what they want. Both Alexander and Caesar did that. They're just sort of disappointed that their men wouldn't want to follow them in this next adventure. And the men tumble and they say, no, we love you more than ever, if anything. Don't be like that. Don't do that. Well, Cinna just did not command that sort of love and authority over his men. And he certainly couldn't just bully them into anything. That's what he tries to do. He sort of berates them. He calls a meeting of sort of the general officers, or a lot of the men, in fact. It sounds like a big meeting. And he sort of chastises them, rebukes them, you know, calling them names and things. And at one point, his lictors, i.e. his small number of personal bodyguard, he's trying to move through the crowd. And one random legionary standing in the way, one of Cinna's lictors goes to push him out of the way, or does push him out of the way. And apparently the crowd sort of turns nasty when they see that. They start shouting at Cinna. They're sort of not taking their dressing down. They won't be told off by Cinna. And some start even throwing stones. And Cinna doubles down, starts really berating them. And one of Cinna's men, one of his lictors, draws a sword, we're told. And then he gets stabbed. And then suddenly it's just a bloodbath and Cinna's murdered by his own men. So that's how Cinna died. Just a mutiny among his own men because he didn't handle them right. Because he didn't read the room properly. He thought he could berate or bully them into doing anything he wanted and they just wouldn't. So now Cinna's dead. And Cinna was, fairly clearly, the preeminent leader of the Marian faction. So now he's dead. It's really Carbo, Scipio, Marius the Younger, and another consul called Narbinus. There's still a fair few leaders of this Popularis faction, the Marian faction. It's a bit like a many-headed Hydra, because it's a big movement. It's not just a small number of senators, and if you kill them all, it's done with. No, it's a big social movement. You know, hopefully I've made that clear over the last few episodes, that it's this idea about how unfair the urban plebs of Rome have been treated for hundreds of years, how the Italian citizenry have been treated unfairly by the senatorial establishment for hundreds of years. So the fact that Cinna is dead, it doesn't mean anything's over. Nothing's over. The torch will be passed to the next ones, Marius the Younger and Carbo mainly. But Sulla will still have armies to fight, will still have a faction, will still have a social movement to defeat.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.